Hi, welcome to Slash Report, newly renamed. I'm Fru, and I'm joined today by M. Klutz and our special guest, the Hoyden.
Welcome, the Hoyden.
Hello.
This week, we're going to talk about superheroes. We're going to talk about your favorite people playing strippers in movies. Vibrators, which I'm sure you're really excited for.
And the Crow, but not in a bestial sort of way.
Oh, thank goodness. God. Here we go. So, this week on Slash Report, now that we're cleaned up a little bit and improved, I think, I decided that we should have real cover art instead of my 30-second job in Skitch that happened last week.
I don't know, that shit was classy. I'm Klutz.
It was pretty classy, but I think that we can keep the tone and, you know, improve on it a little bit.
Right.
So obviously I used my work computer to make this week's cover art, which features Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man.
Appropriately, I'm Thor.
Well, obviously.
I mean, I am the person who would go wenching and hurl beer steins on the ground when their drinks please me.
Absolutely. And of course the Hoyden is Iron Man because, I mean, come on.
It's the Hoyden. Of course she's Iron Man.
Her name practically screams Iron Man.
Oh, God. Now I'm imagining the Regency Hoyden, who will never, ever be able to find a man and who screwed up when she was being presented to the queen.
Nice.
It's terrible. Why have you done this to me? She falls in love with the footman, Steve, who's still too good for her.
You've thought about this way too hard.
Read way too much Regency.
But the point is, guys, it wasn't until, like, 3 days after I had made this cover, which I made, like, well in advance of this recording,
Yes. That
I realized that I might have made a small mistake in casting myself as Captain America.
Since you're the only person who's not American on this podcast.
The only non-American.
Oh my God.
I sent you a justification over email. I was like, no, it totally made sense at the time.
I think your justification was, like, just you in all caps typing, but I'm so pure, just like Steve Rogers, I'm so pure.
Wait, I remember now, all I could think was, he's super nice and was raised to kill, and so was I.
Okay, total aside, regarding the super nice part, when I was in Toronto, there was an actual moment where Enclet said to me and the Hoyden, knowing you guys has turned me into an asshole. I used to sit on the train and think compassionate thoughts about other people on public transit. I don't think I've ever laughed that insanely in public before.
I did!
I, like, not only don't believe you, I just... Oh my God.
This is just a measure of how much of a bad person you have made me.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of bad to go around. Like, I'm a sharing, caring sort of jerk.
I'm gonna get you hooked on all of the things that you can only have in Toronto, and you're gonna make me a terrible person, and we're gonna call it a fair trade.
Yeah, well, I think that actually sounds fun. You're already a terrible person, so my work is done.
Mission accomplished.
Check. Moving on. Next goal, rule the world.
Ooh, I wouldn't be very good at that.
It's cool. You can just do the fun stuff for ruling the world. I can actually choose who to kill and stuff.
Can I have a scepter?
Yes.
Excellent.
You can also hit people with the scepter.
Yes. Okay. Done.
To do a quick TV recap just to start us off for the week. There was stuff on, but I'm pretty sure that M. Klutz and I are the only people on the internet world, whatever, who actually watch Necessary Roughness, so we'll spare you guys that.
Probably for the best.
White Collar, though.
White Collar.
White Collar.
Are you fully caught up in the time?
More or less.
Okay.
I'm completely not caught up, but I don't care. You should talk anyway, though.
Well, I'll avoid the major spoiler, but I will say, this week's episode of White Collar was, for the most part, like, considering that this is it a season finale or a mid-season finale?
It's a mid-season finale, right? Because I think that... No, wait, White Collar is a summer show.
Oh my gosh, so season finale?
So it might be the finale, yeah.
Okay, so for a season finale, I'm going to say a little bit middling. You know, there's some stuff going on. It's a case. That's great. You have an interesting guest actor. Neil jumps off of a building with, like, a parachute type, like, mini.
Which, can we say that's starting to become old hat for white collar finales? Totally. Like, remember when he jumped off of something onto an awning in front of a bakery? I'm starting to think that that's, like, the new rule with white collar. You know it's the finale.
Right.
When Neil hurls himself off of something.
And honestly, I wasn't that impressed with it. It almost felt like something I would see in an older TV show. Like, I really just wasn't into it. Things I did like were Mozzie throwing down the gauntlet, saying that Neil had to choose between him and Peter.
Okay, the giant hourglass. That was pretty great.
That was pretty great. This is like Mozzie's version of marriage counseling. And while the last 5 to 10 minutes were filmed in a really weird way, I get why they did it, but it just didn't work for me. Oh my god. I'm not going to say what happened in case you haven't seen it, but oh my god.
As for the next one up is Leverage, which I have to admit I have not watched at all.
Did you watch 407?
I didn't watch any. I think I've seen like maybe 3 episodes of this new season.
Okay, so this season of Leverage, one of the things you need to know is that someone was bugging their office, but it's not the law, it's someone else. And that's left hanging for a couple of episodes and resolved this week, in which there are 2 Leverage episodes back to back. Not to say that they're 2-parters, it's just they do 2 episodes at once for no good reason. In the first episode, you have kind of a CSI Nick Stokes buried alive scenario, only it's Hardison who's buried alive. And there are a lot of feelings.
So, translation, you were epically weak for this.
I was actually a little bit uncomfortable.
Oh, by the feelings?
Yeah, because it was about Parker having feelings. And, you know, while I want Parker to have some feelings, I don't want her to be overwhelmed because I, like, overly sympathize with her. I can't help myself.
I completely understand. I mean, who doesn't overly sympathize with Parker?
I can't tell Parker if you're being sarcastic or not. Sorry, Hoyden?
I was just saying, Parker has very specific feelings, and I'm comfortable with that range of very specific feelings.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
That's accurate.
In this episode, though, she has to come to terms with romantic feelings.
This is the great thing. Like, in case you guys haven't watched Leverage and are worried, or haven't been tuned into Leverage and have worried about an underlying romance ruining the series, Leverage has taken to explaining the inevitable romantic tryst between 2 of its lead characters with bar peanuts. So it's a show that understands your emotional stagnation just as well as your therapist does. So give it a chance.
Yeah.
Moving away from television shows, I didn't anticipate having a news recap, but then I was bombarded with absolutely ludicrous links that were slightly fanishly related. And can we start with this item that I'm sure that the Hoyden has feelings about, which involves Matt Bomer, Channing Tatum, and Alex Pettifer, or however you pronounce his last name, all being strippers in a movie called Magic Mike, directed by, to cap it all off, Steven Soderbergh?
Okay, I have feelings. I have many feelings. And my feelings start with being sort of, I have to say that in the past, like, Channing Tatum for me was just, I don't know, I felt sort of meh about him. And then I saw him in The Eagle, and I was still like, well, you are indeed very pretty, and you do suffer, you know, in a really attractive fashion. So that's great. But then I, you know, the whole thing that he was a stripper, and I was like, all of a sudden, just overwhelmed with more affection for him than I knew what to do with. And then,
I don't know what that says about you.
Many terrible, terrible things. Probably. I mean, most likely.
I mean, to be fair, I decided I really enjoyed him as a person when I found out about the on-set accident during The Eagle where someone dumped basically boiling hot water all over his penis.
What?
Ow.
You guys never heard about this?
No.
No.
So you know the river scene where they're basically like being gay and frozen at each other?
Right.
So they were filming that somewhere obviously freezing, probably actually Scotland. And one of the things they had to do was they just had to like keep pouring hot water on them to keep them from hypothermia or whatever. And one of the poor women who was charged with doing this apparently just dumped a lap full of boiling hot water on Channing Tatum and, like, basically put little Channing out of action for a while. Which is, if you look this shit up on YouTube, like, Jamie Bell just laughs at him about it, which makes me love him, too.
Good for Jamie Bell. I'm glad that he really takes his friend's safety and health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. Obviously, he's recovered. I mean, his wife isn't suing the production company.
Whoa, he's married to a lady?
Oh.
I'm just really surprised.
I have no response to that.
Isn't he kind of like, you know, when we look at Bradley James, I'm like, oh, Bradley James, you're so pretty and you're such a nice person and you are probably not very bright. I feel like Channing Tatum is like the extreme of that.
Channing Tatum, this is going to horrify you, M-Klutz. Channing Tatum is actually probably significantly more intelligent than Bradley James is.
Oh my, it's like you just ruined my worldview. In my head, he's just like the dumbest dog. Like, lots of good loyalty or whatever, but just incredibly dumb.
And now he gets to teach various dudes how to strip.
Delightful.
One of these dudes being Matt Bomer, which is, our white collar reference for this segment. But yeah, so it teaches Matt Bomer how to strip and then teaches other people how to strip. Anyway, it's a movie with Matt Bomer, who is also appearing in other movies that keep surprising me. I saw some preview recently. I was like, hello, Matt Bomer. So he's everywhere.
It's his turn, right? Like, he was on the cusp of being a really big movie star. The Superman movie that eventually went to Brandon Routh
should have gone to him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was basically locked in up until the very last minute.
Actually, maybe that's why they keep having him jumping off buildings as, like, a Superman reference. It's the kind of lame thing that I would do if I worked in television.
I could say the number of lame things we would do if you worked in television is pretty epic at this point.
It's pretty long.
But
Yeah.
All right, moving right along. So I'm just going to throw this out there because I refuse to comment on it. Jason Momoa has written his own sequel to Conan. Carry on.
I have no comment other than I'm probably not paying to see the first one. I might not even see it at all. And I'm almost certainly not paying or going to see the second one.
I'm not going to lie. I'm probably going to go see it because,
of course,
I don't know.
He slays and he is content.
That is terrible.
Because of the stunning dialogue engendered in that film. Have you seen the trailers for this?
Yes.
You're still going to go see it?
This.
Probably.
Okay, so now you're officially obligated to go see it and report back in.
Also, I'm just going to say, all of our listeners now have a really good impression of what the Hoyden is actually like. If you were curious.
Yeah, the truth comes out.
This is the truth.
I don't think this is, like, a secret or anything. I'm also the person who went and saw Cowboys and Aliens twice. For totally legitimate reasons.
Which were?
One reason. Daniel Craig's ass. Like, that's basically it. Since that's what the movie's about, basically.
We're gonna have to really teach you about indoor versus outdoor thoughts. We're moving right along. This is something I don't actually give a shit about, but also amuses me, because it's fucking Channing Tatum again.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. He's like the clap. Bradley Cooper is out as a potential candidate to play the Crow, and potential replacements are Channing Tatum and Mark Wahlberg. Now, is it just me, or can you not think of two actors that are more different and both equally unsuited for the part? Like, Channing Tatum weighs about 300 pounds too heavy for this anorexic emo goth fest. Mark Wahlberg is forever associated with A, Marky Mark, and B, Entourage for me.
That's all I can think of when I hear his name.
Basically.
Yeah, or The Italian Job, which is the one good thing he ever did.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that movie. It was pretty good.
About him, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Hugh Dancy.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So, Hugh Dancy.
I can say that when everyone sent me this, like, everyone started being like, there's going to be a movie about the hysteria machine. My immediate knee-jerk reaction was, what do you mean? Someone already wrote Sherlock fanfic about that.
Good job.
Yeah.
Okay, so Hysteria is a movie about Hugh Dancy inventing the vibrator to cure hysteria in women. But I'm just going to throw this out there. Hugh Dancy probably deserves better from me, but the only thing that I can remember him being in, and the thing that I, like, the only one I care about, Ella Enchanted.
Here's the thing, though, Mclutz. I'm just going to say this as a friend and as someone who loves you. That surprises absolutely nobody.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Like, in terms of your media consumption, you vary wildly between, like, rampant pervert who's on an FBI watch list and, like, 12-year-old tween who's addicted to the Disney Channel.
That's basically an excellent summation of me as a person.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
My mom called me a 12-year-old boy at dinner the other night.
So this wasn't even, like, a year ago. This is recent.
No, this was, like, 2 days ago. I met her for dinner. And she was like, well, you're basically a 12-year-old boy. And I was like, yep.
This is definitely a look at your life, look at your choices moment.
I'm going to say my choices are fucking excellent.
You know who else thinks their choices are fucking excellent, but I disagree?
Eames.
Yes, obviously, across the board. But Tony Stark, which brings us to the topic I'm choosing to call Tony Stark is not good enough for Steve Rogers.
And I am choosing to call Tony Stark can earn Steve Rogers' love.
No.
Yes.
Do you know how much antibiotic material that, like, we're going to have to wash Tony Stark in before he's good enough for just even being friends with Steve?
Tony Stark can cure himself and then marry Steve Rogers and become not a good man, but a slightly better man.
Ugh.
So the point is, guys, we're going to talk about the Avengers, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man. And we're going to make fun of the Hulk a little bit, because let's be serious. He sucks. He shouldn't be an Avenger. He should, like, there's no... Okay, so you think of the Avengers, and you're like, yeah, Iron Man, yes, Thor, yes, Captain America, and then they're like, P.S., the Hulk is there, and you're like, the who?
Can I just say, though, for whenever you talk about the Avengers, You're talking about two very bifurcated groups of people who are going to go see that movie, right? It's exactly like the Trek reboot was. You had the huge crew of diehards who, even though they thought that the movie was going to suck, was going to see it. I mean, the same way that I went and saw all three Star Wars prequels. Like, I went knowing it was going to hurt me, but mm-hmm. I showed up and paid money anyways. And then, you know, you have the new people who are there because, like, oh, Thor is strangely attractive, even though his name is Thor. And I really want to make sure that in the course of the Avengers, Tony Stark doesn't accidentally help Steve out of his virginity in any way. So, I mean, yeah, when you say the Avengers, like, nothing comes to mind. Like, nothing. Absolutely. It's not associated with anything. So yes. Give us a little overview of it first.
Okay, so the Avengers is basically, if you know anything about the Marvel Universe, or if you have been watching the little extra scenes that Marvel has been throwing in at the end of all their movies, Nick Fury, who is in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Strategic Homeland Initiative, something, defense, whatever, you know, that group almost of people. The what?
I said you almost got it.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
That's what it is. Yeah.
At any rate, Nick Fury is like, fuck, shit is getting real. Do you know who could solve this problem? All of these bitches, but we need them to work together. And the only person who can get all of these bitches to work together is Nick Fury. Because he's Samuel L. Jackson.
And he does have an eye patch. Like, if a dude named Nick Fury came up to me and told me to do stuff and he had an eye patch, I would probably do it.
I would probably do it. Yeah. So Nick Fury's job is to, like, herd bitches. And that's what the Avengers...
That's on his business card, official bitch herder.
Official bitch herder, that's what the Avengers movie is going to be about, which means it's going to be awesome.
Weirdly offensive already, A+, M+.
That's not offensive, that's an accurate summation.
Continue.
So, what really happens is that Tony Stark, Thor, Steve Rogers, and whoever the fuck is going to play the Hulk, get together, try to fight evil, destroy most of America, and there's probably going to be a lot of man-flirting in the middle there, which I'm going to enjoy thoroughly, because I believe that Tony Stark can earn Steve Rogers' love.
I'm abstaining from this.
Hoyden?
Aiden should comment on it instead of me, because I'm just going to make a face, which you can imagine.
I can see a face.
I mean, I always thought that first of all, Pepper Potts, way too good for Tony. Way too good for Tony. Really wanted her to hook up with the CIA dude or whoever he was. Homeland Security. That's not the point.
The SHIELD guy?
But the point is, I would rather have Tony Stark with Steve Rogers. Like, maybe if he really worked for it. Like, really worked for it.
Oh, I want him to work for it hard.
Are you kidding me? This guy is the legacy of everything that makes the ideals of America good. He's like the little guy who has so much courage and hates bullies. How could you do this to him?
Part of the reason that I can do this to him is that, as an outsider, I can say that America is a country of opposing forces. You know, it's very strictly set into two separate paths. You have the Republicans and the Democrats. You have porn and church. Like,
well, I oppose porn violating church.
I'm not saying porn should violate church, but I'm saying it's a polarized country. And in that way, it makes perfect sense for Steve Rogers to get with Tony Stark because they're the two halves of America. Steve Rogers is apple pie and, like, freedom, etc. And Tony Stark is the right to earn fucking millions of dollars and, like, spend it all on coke and hookers.
Why can't he just spend it on coke and hookers and leave Steve alone? I just worry about him a great deal.
I think that they're going to be beautiful together. It's going to be lovely.
I just, like, wanted Steve to be my friend. And, like, he probably would have attended campus ministry. And he was that hot guy that you always wanted to date, but, like, you knew that he was a little too sweet and a little too dumb, and it would just be wrong and rapacious.
I'd probably still date him. So although sketchy.
Although, to sort of go back to what we were talking about in terms of, well, MCOTS being the only one of us who has any knowledge of comics and Avengers, I think people who come from comics have obviously probably a much different perception of the relationship between Steve and Tony, because it's all like, I don't know, emo buckets in the comics, right?
Oh, they're like hardcore in love with each other in the comics. It's pretty great. If you ever are looking for actually a fix of like gay Marvel stuff, you should check out, her name is Stereo Wire, StereoWire. We can link to it on the Twitter feed, but she does amazing fan art and sometimes just posts about how gay comic books are. And they're great. Her posts are amazing. Very enjoyable. I'd also say Tomomichi posts a lot of good stuff related to that.
I thought she was only anime.
No, she actually does some comic stuff too. Oh. There was a time where I wanted to get back into Batman, and I wasn't sure what to read, and she gave me, like, a massive list, but said, these are the five things that you need to read right now. I bought them, and they are absolutely brilliant. Like, some of the best of anything that I've ever read in a graphic novel.
All right. Okay, well, okay. Going back to the Avengers, just looking at this cast list, right, and I'm compiling this entirely from the little snippet of the Avengers preview that they showed at the very end of Captain America. Just like the size of that cast, I my true question, and I wrote it down in our rundown notes that I sent to everybody before we started recording, how much of a hot fucking mess is the Avengers going to be exactly on a scale of 1 to season 8 of House?
That's a good question. I'm going to let Hoyden go first.
I think that's a terrible question because, well, here's the thing. It's, even if it really is a hot fucking mess, again, like, it's not as though I'm not going to go see it and will probably derive some enjoyment from it, even if it's for totally spurious reasons. So maybe I'm not a good person to ask about how much of a mess it's going to be because I'm going to love it anyway. Probably.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like that's just not a terribly convincing response from someone who has admitted she's going to see the Conan movie.
In that case, I would say that Hoyden's opinion doesn't count.
Yeah, I think so too.
Negated by Conan.
The tastemakers have erased you, Hoyden.
Ooh, do you really want to say we're the tastemakers?
I mean, in this case. I mean, really? I read books and stuff.
Really?
You're gonna go
Nina Garcia at me? Aw. That's so mean.
I have book learning.
If I were going to rate the Avengers preemptively on a scale of 1 to season 8 of House, I'm going to say it's probably a 2 or a 3.
Okay.
Really? Yeah, because I'm going to say I went to see Iron Man expecting it to be absolute garbage, and I loved it. Like, absolutely loved it. Who didn't?
That's because Iron Man 1 was amazing.
Yes, it was. I went to see I went to see Thor. Thor! And you know what? I really enjoyed Thor. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I thought it was fantastic. There were some problems, but not that many. And it was really fun and funny. Like, actually funny. Everyone in the theater was laughing.
Like, on purpose?
On purpose.
Okay.
At the right points that you would want people to laugh. And even dudes in the audience were like, holy shit, that dude is hot.
I don't know if it's worth making people gay since
Star Trek.
Whatever that movie was.
Yeah. However, while I loved Captain America, like, loved it in my pure heart, like, in the part of me that is a little kid, I loved it. That had more plot holes than any movie I've seen recently, and I saw Cowboys and Aliens. Also,
who hasn't seen that movie?
Probably.
Nice.
I can't emphasize enough how useless the Hulk is. So that's my factor 3 hot fucking mess.
I mean, here's the thing. I'll be really interested to see if the Avengers movie pulls it together for me, because I have to say that while I loved the first Iron Man, it was really lukewarm on Iron Man 2, and to be honest, and even though I know M. Klutz, this will hurt your pure heart, I was actually very lukewarm on Captain America as well. I know, stay with me. But I'll be interested to see if actually the Avengers manages to pull all these movies that I've sort of liked but wasn't super in love with, if it can, you know, assemble something out of that that makes me super love it. So.
That sort of makes me think of a comment that I read, and I wish I remember where this came from, where someone said that a number of the recent Marvel movies have all felt like enormously expensive trailers for the Avenger film.
If that's the case, I would actually be a little bit worried.
Because, I mean, like, you could justifiably argue that Thor and Captain America were definitely trailers for the Avenger films. Like, both of those were strictly framed as lead-ins for the Avenger, like, no more obviously than Captain America, where the entire thing was, like, a flashback, like, an intense flashback. Like, if I read the structure of this film in a fanfic, I would, like, give it a frowny face.
No.
Yes, I would frowny face it.
Oh. You know what? I'm gonna say, while I'm giving it the factor 3 hot fucking mess scale, that's gonna be a new scale. Yep. If anyone can pull that shit together, it's Nick Fury.
Yeah, but, okay, I'm really sorry that I'm going to have to break this to you, M. Klutz.
Nick Fury,
I want you to be sitting down for this.
Oh, dear.
Nick Fury is not real.
However, Samuel L. Jackson is.
Right, but there are other people involved in the film.
And you don't think that Samuel L. Jackson could smack some sense into them?
I feel like Samuel L. Jackson is wearing an eye patch the entire time, so his field of vision is narrowed.
I'm going to trust in Samuel L. Jackson the way I have never trusted in a higher power.
I literally have zero response to that. Okay, so I'm going to jump to the next topic, because how the hell do you follow that up?
You don't.
That being, so we're going from new and pending fandoms to a thing that you and I definitely end up talking about a lot, Hoyden. Those black hole fandoms that keep sucking us back in. Like, whenever you get depressed, it's like that old ex that you can't really leave alone. Like, you find yourself somehow, like, drunk, staggering out of their apartment at, like, 2 a.m, doing the walk of shame. Again, like, once a year. And my fandom definitely that falls into that category is The Phantom Menace. I don't know how it happens. Like, one day it's like a Saturday afternoon and it's raining and I should be doing some other shit. And then it's like 3 a.m. and I'm reading Obi-Wan slave fic and harem pants again. And I have no idea how that progressed.
I was actually thinking about that this afternoon, because I was thinking about those fandoms again that you not to use the same metaphor, but ones that you might hit up like a bottle of wine after a really hard day. And I think there's a pattern for me, which includes Phantom Menace, by the way, so that all of my shame is fully displayed towards everyone on the internet, because that's super important.
Yeah.
But they tend to be from fandoms that were very, very large that I never wrote for. So once in a while, I have like an X-Files binge, and then there's Phantom Menace, and what else is large and terrible that...
That you didn't write for. Like Smallville?
What? Smallville, in fact. I watched like the first two seasons of Smallville, and then nothing until like the series finale, and then I was like, oh, you know what time it is! And it was definitely time to read for Smallville Unpreg. It was definitely what happened.
There's like a lot of Smallville Unpreg, though, so that should have kept you busy for about a year.
Basically. Or a good month, anyway.
Yeah. So it's funny that you mentioned big fandoms that you didn't write for, because a strange thing that happens, gentle listeners, if you do have a tendency to have written for those big fandoms that you used to dip into occasionally. And I was like in college back then, so it was much more prolific and a lot more intoxicated, so writing came easier and faster. Like, I will find myself occasionally going through archives and I'm like, I really want something dumb, like totally mindless, cracky to read. Sounds sort of stupid but fun. And I'll read a summary and I was like, that sounds great. And I'll click on it, it's like, God damn it, I wrote this.
I'm just gonna say that happens to you a lot, like still. All the time.
Has it happened to me recently?
The thing that happens to you the most, which I think is hilarious, is we'll be on chat, and you will be trolling Delicious, looking for stuff to read. And you'll be like, wow, I just clicked on this because it said it had babies in it. And then you'll be like, 4 seconds later, I wrote this. I'm just not sure what level of detail you have showing on Delicious that you don't see the URL that's like, glitterati.
Well, here's the thing. I don't really look at that stuff. Like, you and I have talked about this. Like, I don't really, the title is of nominal importance. I never look at the author. I'm always only ever looking at if the tags are informative or if there's a summary. That's all I'm looking at.
I will say, so when I'm on Delicious, summary, then tags, then title. And even if the summary and the tags are good, the title can swing me into either totally clicking on it so hard that the internet breaks, or being like, that sounded really good until I saw that you called this a bucket of my tears. And then I'm gone.
A bucket of my tears. That sounds distinctly like it's J2 fanfiction.
It probably was. Luckily, I don't
actually
read.
Also sounds like something I would have read.
Yeah, see, this is where you would have clicked on it, and I would have been like, one, I'm so glad I don't read J2. Two, oh my god, Prue is clicking on this right now.
This has happened a lot before, where you're like, something terrible just showed up on my feed. I know you're reading it right now, because you're weak to all of the darkness that's in there.
Either that, or I paste the link to you, and you are already clicking on it.
Yep.
That's definitely happened.
Hoyden and I have revealed ours. What about you?
My nostalgic fandoms are kind of dumb. You might laugh at me a little. I definitely occasionally fall into two specific stories in Gundam Wing fandom. One of which is Daydreams by... I'm not going to be able to remember the author's name, but again, I'll post it on Twitter. But it's a contemporary AU that I can't stay away from. I wish it were a book, because it's so terribly good for me. But I don't actually like Gundam Wing the show. Like, I tried watching the show and it did nothing for me, but the fandom was amazing for me, and so sometimes I fall back into it. And Sailor Moon. I can never escape Sailor Moon. It was my first real fandom, that and Lois and Clark, and I get sucked back into them really easily if I'm feeling like, as though I'm a failure, because it reminds me of being 10.
Wait.
What?
Oh.
Hoyden, you go first.
Well, I was going to say that in some ways Delicious has both changed my life, but maybe also made me worse off. And that now when I, you know, have these periodic, diving headfirst back into these fandoms, I've just learned to like click, you know, to mark those four fics that I'm definitely going to read, like in Angel. Don't even front Prue, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, I'm completely aware of what you're talking about.
Even I'm aware of that one.
Because it involves kittens, and so it's great.
Kitten in a teapot?
That story's amazing.
That story's beautiful.
Unreservedly.
That's the story that made me watch Angel when I had broken my elbow.
Oh God, why would you watch Angel?
I was high! I was high for like a month and a half!
Life, by the way, fandom. So, let me give you a little context. I don't know how much M. Klutz has actually talked about this, about her experience with recognizing she's broken herself. But, I basically figured out that she either had a concussion or some sort of slow brain bleed when she got home after having a bike accident and started to tell me how everyone was being so nice to her. And that it was really painful to move her arm, but it was fine because everyone was so nice to her. How long did it take you to actually go to the hospital?
I believe 8 hours had passed.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, so to avoid getting hit by a car, I went into the streetcar tracks, which if you've ever ridden a bike over streetcar tracks, you can't do because you will fall and hurt yourself. And I fell badly. All of the traffic stopped. People came out to help me. And I was like, well, I'm on my way to get my hair cut, so I better just carry on. Carried on. Folded up my bike. Carried it up 3 flights of stairs. Got half a haircut before the people who were cutting it were like, P.S. We're pretty sure that you have a concussion, among other things. Like, you're bleeding from the face.
I'm muting myself in the background here because I'm laughing so hard.
Managed to get home in a taxi. Cried on the stairs of my house for a little while in front of my sister-in-law. Decided that I really need to take a shower because I only had half a haircut and was covered in my own hair. And when I tried to take off my shirt, realized that I could probably not get my arm through a sleeve ever again. But then decided to wait it out for a little while before suggesting that we take transit to the hospital, which was vetoed, by the way.
Thank God for your sister-in-law. That's all I have to say.
Long story short, broken elbow, severely strained wrist, a concussion, and heavy narcotics for 2 months.
Oh my God. It was so good. It was amazing. It was like having a bi-proxy acid trip.
If you ever go back
to none of the freaking out, all of the amazingness.
I was really calm. But if you ever go back through...
I thought she was really calm.
I felt really calm. If you ever go back through my Delicious fandom, I'm really sorry if you hit the section where everything is spelled wrong. And sometimes I describe a story that is in, say, NCIS fandom, and you click on it, and it's Batman. I was high. It was really okay. High.
Let me get this straight. M. Klutz, while she is concussed and high and in pain, Prue, this is the time you choose to incept her with angel fic. Is this what you're telling me?
No, she had already come home from the hospital, and she wanted something comforting to read. And so I was, like, flipping through my mental Rolodex. Like, the stuff that comforts me would probably horrify her. So I was thinking, like, what sort of story would make her happy? And I was like, you know what? I think the protocol wherein Wesley gets a kitten that hides in a teapot would make her very happy.
And it did.
And I bet it wasn't even just the drugs.
You know what? There's a lot of stuff that I read when I was on those drugs that I was like, this story is 5 stars. And then afterwards I was like, what the shit is that? Protocol is not one of them. Protocol was like everything I love in a fandom that I have no interest in. So it was very good for me.
The fact that it remains unfinished is one of the greatest tragedies of my life.
Agreed.
If it would help, I would hold a candlelight vigil of like one.
Of one. It would be 3. The other 2 of us would be there.
Yeah, but we would be like on different continents.
I still... Rat Queen's blog journal to see if she's updated or feels like updating. It's not going to happen, but I long for it.
I mean, like, the hope is what keeps us alive, right?
It's true.
That's totally. What's left in the box after Pandora opened it.
There's a Primeval story. There are two Primeval stories.
I'm checking out.
That I would really love to see finished, and they probably never will be, because Primeval is a tiny, mostly shitty fandom where nobody writes anything, especially not for my pairing. But, you know, it's part of my dream, and if holding a candlelit vigil would help, I would be there. You can come back now, Prue.
Are we done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Oh, and for all the people last week who said that they were really entertained by how horrified I was by M. Klutz's discussion of the Sentinel, just wait. There's tons of that sort of stuff coming up.
Oh my god, there's so much. You have no idea.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the Sentinel is one of those fandoms that I, you know, dive back into.
God damn it.
You know, I would actually say that even though SGA is not old, when I'm weak, that's when SGA gets me.
Well, there's so much of it.
There's so much.
It's just like, it's like you're sitting there and you've, like, broken yourself of your coke habit, right?
Yeah.
Like, Joe Flanagan rolls up and makes it snow, and you're like, fuck!
How am I
supposed to resist this?
There are things that happen in SGA fandom that have yet to happen as well as they happened in SGA. Like, you know, if I want Psychic Tigers, it's SGA.
Right.
No other fandom has done Psychic Tigers that well. They've tried.
I love it. M-Klutz, I love that you had to qualify it with as well.
Well, listen. If you're going to do Psychic Tigers, do it right.
Exactly. You know, like, go big or go home.
That's right. You have to go all the way.
Exactly.
There's no pussying out of that one.
There is no... You know what, I'm going to rescind whatever comment I was just about to make. It was so horrible that I even had to swallow it down.
I saw that coming, and I'm glad that you swallowed it back.
Yeah, swallowed it all the way back.
Swallow, don't spit.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, you did. SGA is still, like, I think SGA is the last huge fandom, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think the only thing that even comes close to it in size now would be Inception.
Which is interesting. You know, I can't get away from Inception fandom. I thought, every time I think I'm done with it, something shows up and I wind up reading like 12 Arthur Eames stories in a day while trying to do my job.
I feel like I'm done with them. Like, I have one pending story. But otherwise, I feel like I wrote my entire thesis, master thesis, and doctoral dissertation on them. And I'm done. And then I accidentally deleted it off the internet like a champion. But then I re-uploaded it, so I'm definitely done.
If we're going to talk about, like, small fandoms that you fall into frequently...
Those are the most depressing, right? Because they're, like, 14 good stories, and you just read them over and over again.
Yeah. So, I got a Kindle recently. And I have uploaded as much fic as I can to it, because I'm going on a very long trip soon, and I wanted to have a bunch of fic with me. Which means that as I'm going through some of it ahead of time, to be like, oh, I love this, I have to read it before I leave, I've stumbled into things like all of my favorite Dresden Files stories. And Dresden Files is the epitome of a small fandom. The one I'm actually reading right now is one that Hoyden really likes, I know. Oh, and you know what? No, never mind. Hoyden wrote this, which makes it...
That happens a lot, too, in case you're wondering. Where M. Klutz wrecks something to Hoyden, and then Hoyden is like, dude, I wrote that.
I tend to read things in formats where I just don't see who the author is. And yeah, I really enjoy Hoyden's writing, and I tend to just not recognize it for some reason. it's a problem.
I think, though, that there's a difference between, like, at least for me, I think the small fandoms, I don't know, I think I tend to revisit them, I mean, even more so now because of the way, like, my delicious, you know, feed is set up, that unlike big fandoms that, like, I go into, like, periodically, like, I'm much more likely to keep up with smaller fandoms like the Dresden Files or Jeeves and Wooster that are definitely small but still produce things. And so, I don't know, unlike bigger fandoms where, like, I think I have, like, this big phase and I'm done, I tend to keep reading in smaller fandoms. I think
part of the trick with that is on Delicious you can set up subscriptions, which are kind of dangerous because, you know, my subscription for Shepherd McKay would update and there would be 1,000 stories a day and there was no way to sort through them. It was just, you know, luck of the draw. But my Becker Connor tag or my subscription there, I get like 3 stories a month and of course I'm going to read all of them. I can't help myself.
In some ways, I think it's more dangerous than the big fandoms that you go back to for, you know, however, like 12 hours later and you wake up and you're like, what just happened? But
yeah, I don't know. I think that my worst cases with this have always been with fandoms that I once loved ferociously and then kind of like fell out with for whatever reason and then like returned to in a haze. And I mean, the best examples of this are, like I said at the beginning, The Phantom Menace, but recently also The X-Files, which has also been depressing, because all of the stories that I remember being world-changingly good 1,000 years ago, I reread, and I'm like, this does not appeal to me in quite the same way it did when I was still, you know, however young I was back then.
That's how my trips into Sailor Moon fandom are. When I go back to it, I'm like, oh man, this was the best thing that I have ever read. And I go back and I'm like, oh, that's kind of terrible. Because it was written when we were all 14.
Yeah, so okay, this was the question that I thought that your Sailor Moon addiction begged. I mean, I think the Hoyden can speak to this as well. There's a general sentiment that the quality of fan fiction in anime fandoms is not quite as good as your other options, right?
Generally speaking.
And Sailor Moon in particular was like a gateway fandom for thousands.
Yeah.
So that has to be like a fandom of many potential perils.
And not only that too, I just think that your target audience as well at that time is skewed very young. So new to fandom, new to fan fiction, new to writing. So there's a lot of newness, and M. Klutz is perfectly right, that what I thought was absolutely mind-blowing when I was 16 does not quite speak to me in the same way as, you know, that it does now. So I don't think there's any preventing that. I think that's just a natural course of events. But
well, one of the interesting things with Sailor Moon fandom, I don't know how many people know this, but I used to run a pretty popular mailing list in Sailor Moon fandom called... Smurf. Listen.
Smurf?
Smurf. S-M-R-F-F. Which was...
You really shouldn't tell me this, because...
Yeah, I know. It's too late, though.
I'm just gonna do something terrible with this knowledge.
Don't do it. The Sailor Moon Romantic fanfiction mailing list.
Oh, that one.
That one. And I would actually say that the members were split, I would say 60% young girls, or I guess a couple of boys, and 40% people who were in, like, their 20s, 30s, and 40s.
Were they ashamed of themselves?
No, because it's Sailor Moon fandom. You're in for life.
Wow.
It's, yeah. You know how, like, if you take LSD...
Because I would be ashamed of myself. Or at least I would lie about my age.
No, people were fully open about it. It was very... It was, like, a really good community. But I will say, like, looking back, I'm like, oh... That's terrible, that's terrible, that's terrible. But at the time, it was super good for me. So when I fall back into Sailor Moon fandom, I don't fall into the fan fiction. I try, and then I fail out of it, and I just read the manga again.
I don't understand. Okay, like, this is another thing that, like, has never made sense to me. The source material in a lot of these things that we're talking about right now, being the nostalgia fandoms, sucks. Like, okay, let's all agree that the Star Wars prequels were, like, the worst thing that ever happened to Star Wars. And The Phantom Menace being the least egregious, but still egregious, one of those three movies, right?
Fact.
Exactly. How can you bear it? Like, I've read every story on the Master and Apprentice archive, right? Like, even that one that everyone is listening to this, like, is thinking, like, whatever horrible one you just imagine, like, yes, I've read that one probably more than once. But I think I've only seen the movie, like, 3 times. which is very low considering how many, like, Star Wars freaks I went to college with.
I was going to say, the quality of the source material does not guarantee a reciprocal level of quality in the fandom.
No, of course not. But I'm just saying, like, I guess, so Sailor Moon More For You is more about you genuinely miss the source material.
I do. It's still really good for me. The manga especially. Like, I still enjoy the anime a lot, but the manga gets me every single time. And I'm going to say, anyone who is in Sailor Moon fandom, you put them in front of a crystal clear Destiny, they're probably going to, like, freak out.
I don't know what that is.
It is the episode where Usagi has to transform in the elevator in front of Mamoru without knowing that he's Tuxedo Mask in order to save their lives. And he is immediately kidnapped, almost killed, and brainwashed after that and forgets everything. You know what?
I should let everyone stew in that for a little bit.
If you're a Sailor Moon fan...
let your fingers get pruny in it.
If you're in Sailor Moon fandom, that's, like, a pivotal episode, and nothing... Like, that episode is still probably my favorite episode of all time of Sailor Moon.
See, now this makes me feel bad whenever you tell me something I wrote is really good, because I know that, like, among your really good column includes that.
The range of quality and things that I like, the things that I would say are very good... ranges from things that you would assume are terrible to things that you would be like, M-Klutz, this is the best thing I've ever read. Which is similar to my, I super enjoy Pokemon, I also super enjoy classic literature.
Yes, that is true.
I don't make a judgment call based on the quality that other people would apply to it. It's just, is this good for me, yes or no?
Well, I think too, like, is Per and I are talking about large Western fandoms, that I think there's this sort of threshold of the source material being bad enough that fandom rose up to, you know, put their own two cents in. So I think it's sort of understandable that the things that we're eagerly, you know, devouring fic for in nostalgia are things that weren't that great in the first place in a lot of cases. That drove people to write all of this fic.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hoyden, because frankly, SGA was like a master class in television writing.
Can we put this in the opposite direction, though? So, NCIS. The source material for the first three seasons was brilliant. The fandom is horrible.
Yeah, but for the next five seasons, the fandom didn't get better. It just kind of stays the same.
Right. NCIS is like a weird... It's almost a problem fandom.
It's like a fandom where I unironically read stories where people are transformed magical creatures and will tell other people that given the fact that it's NCIS, this is actually a pretty good fic, which is not something that happens a lot.
Yeah, my rating scale for NCIS is totally different. Like, it's on a curve compared to other fandoms.
We're jackasses.
No, this is just a fact about NCIS fandom. That's why I pimped you into it, because I wanted really good fic, and it wasn't happening.
Yeah, but you only got, like, two out of me. But you have to tell the story about the soap in the bag.
Oh, God, what?
So, a couple years ago, I decided that I really wanted to meet Prue, and I also really wanted to go to New York, where I had never been. And I decided to do both at the same time.
Sounds weirdly stalkery, but it's not creepy.
It's not creepy. We had already been talking for a while, and I sent her a message, and I said, hey, can I visit you in New York? And she said, yeah, please don't make a skin out of my coat. Wait.
No, reverse.
Please don't make a coat out of my skin.
Yes.
Thank you.
So worried about you.
It's been a long day at work. There was a lot of swearing.
Just keep going.
Okay, and after a series of hijinks, the second day, Prue went back to work, and I was on chat for a little bit before heading out for the day, and we were discussing bad fic, as we very often do, and I was trying to describe the kinds of things that you would see crop up on NCIS finders, which is the fic-finding com for NCIS fandom, obviously. And I described a story. I can't have my browser open because it freaks out when I'm running GarageBand. I don't know It's on my journal somewhere if you look under the conversations tag. But suffice to say that the story goes something like, Gibbs wants to mark Tony without actually leaving marks on him because his skin is so beautiful. So what he does is he fills bags with bars of soap, ties Tony to the mast of the boat in his basement, and beats him with them. But afterwards, it just doesn't have the same level of satisfaction, so he winds up whipping him with a whip or something. Or, you know, his fists, whatever, to actually leave physical marks so that the world can see that Tony belongs to him. And there was like a 30-second pause, which is a long time in an instant message conversation, in which Prue was just silent on the other side, followed by, like, in all caps, "Oh my fucking god, oh my fucking god, Mklutz, tell me that's not real."
Like, I couldn't tell. You don't know. Like, that very well could have been a real story.
That is the level of NCIS fandom. Luckily, I invented that story on the spot. It doesn't exist. Please don't write it.
Please don't write it. Like, we don't have a... This isn't, like, some reverse psychology. Mklutz and I don't have, like, a secret desire to see Tony beaten with soap. Like, just don't make it happen.
At any rate, from then on, my scale of reading things in NCIS fandom goes from, is it soap beating? Or do they just transform into something cute? Oh, transform into something cute. I will read that.
God.
If you can't tell which end of that scale is the good end, you probably belong in NCIS fandom.
Oh, you're so cruel, didn't you?
I'm just being honest.
So cruel. But this sort of, like, separately, before anyone gets really upset with us, regarding the bad fic thing, I genuinely mean this. I love bad fic.
Love it so much.
I think bad fic is actually really important, because every single good story comes from someone who started off as a bad fic author.
Oh my god. Everyone, like, has gone back and deleted things from when they started writing.
I can't even delete them. I don't know where they are anymore.
Luckily,
and there's some stuff that's, like, on physical paper. So, I don't know where they are. They're just, like, floating out there. So, the traces of my 11-year-old shame writing Mary Sue self-inserts into, like, God knows what fandom, like, exist forever. And I would hazard to say that, like, that stuff surpasses soap beating in terms of terribleness.
To be fair, soap beating doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, I know, but, like, it surpasses the hypothetical terribleness of that even.
Okay, yeah, which I'm going to say, you know what, actually, the last time I was in London, Xenicus called me out on tagging some terrible things on my Delicious, and I totally understand why, because if you go through my Delicious, some of it you're going to be like, oh, wow, that was a really good story, and some of it you're going to be like, what the fuck was she smoking? Did she break her elbow again?
It was the narcotics.
It wasn't the narcotics. That's how much I enjoy bad fic. There's some stuff that I'm like, yep, you're going to say that this is bad fic. You know what? Super good for me.
Yeah.
If I enjoy it, I tag it.
Definitely. It's understandable. I mean, my rec policy is, like, sort of fascist. Have you heard this?
No.
No. My policy is, like, if you've ever wondered if you're subscribed to my recommendations on Delicious and you've ever wondered why I recommend, like, 3 stories a week and, like, a bumper crop is if I recommend, like, 4 or 5 a week, is because I have a really stringent rule in the sense that I 99% of the time, like, I will comment on everything that I recommend. And the other rule is that if I cannot recommend this without caveats, then I won't recommend it at all. So, like, unless there's something specifically with a caveat in the recommendation, then I recommend it absolutely without reservation. And to be able to do that with stories is kind of rare, right? You like elements of it, you like some of it, but if you made it, like, I loved it so much, made me dizzy.
And that's why I took a screen cap of the time you wrecked me before we were friends.
It's so creepy. Why would you tell anybody that?
It was a special moment for me.
Yeah, skin coat.
No.
Terrible.
I think this actually transitions nicely into the rec section.
Yeah, it does.
Of our program, so maybe we should do some fic recs.
All right, so my first recommendation is
I feel like you guys are all going to judge me really hard for this, but I don't care because I love it. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that it's a work in progress, but one of the best stories that I've read in a really long time. I've been following this probably for like a year now. It's 22 chapters, fairly recently updated, so it's not like it's a dead story. And I'm psyching you up for it because I'm about to tell you that I'm going to wreck a story that's mpreg about teen mom Spock, and it's on fanfiction.net.
Good job.
Right now, a number of you are sitting there thinking that I have a brain tumor, but I'm telling you, this is a great, great story. It's called Home Also, I Cannot Go, by Soon Anemone, I think is the author name, which we'll definitely link on our Twitter account. Just to give you some context, it's a story where Spock, as a teenager around 15, 16 years old, goes to Earth with his parents on some sort of diplomatic trip, and has like a one-night stand with town bicycle Kirk. And this all happens in like the first two chapters or something, and then we don't see Kirk again until chapter 20. It's an insane work of world-building, and not just world-building, culture-building. The depth to which this author fleshes out Vulcan society and the consequences of Spock, who is already an outsider in Vulcan society, going beyond the pale, again, is so interesting. It's a really wonderfully written story about his relationship with his parents and his choices. It's just really, really well done. I love it to pieces. Everyone give it a chance. I know it sounds horrific, but seriously, give it a chance. The other thing that I'm recommending is not actually fan fiction. It's not fan work at all. It's performance art. And I'm wrecking it because it's so terrible that I think that everyone needs to be a part of this.
Oh, God.
And that is exactly what I'm recommending.
Unfortunately, so do I.
Yeah, so this is a... How do I describe this? It's an art piece where a woman decided to merge herself with a horse, I guess. Like, so she started injecting herself with horse blood in order to be one with the horse. And the link we're going to give you actually has the live performance venue of this, where she's shot up with like horse hemoglobin and then horse blood and then straps on a pair of horse legs and walks around with the horse and its trainer. And I don't know. It's just so magical. So, so magical.
Is it
everyone to be a part of it?
Is it magical for you because it's like the extreme end of pony play?
No. I think it's magical for me because she injects herself with horse blood. Like, what the hell else do you need? Like, if you're going to ignore Team Mom Spock, fine. But this is like 5 minutes of your life where you can gawk in abject horror. How can you look away?
I actually did not watch it. I looked at the picture, I read the headline, and then I was like, yeah, I'm done. And walked away.
Okay, you guys, 2 years.
Hoyden, do you want to go?
Sure. Although I should preface this by saying that I thought long and hard about what to wreck this week because my life is full of pain and works in progress. And I just don't feel it's fundamentally fair to wreck works in progress because people understandably might be wary about reading them because they're not finished and maybe they never will be. And I can't do that to unsuspecting people. That's not okay.
I think we're all wrecking works in progress this week.
Oh, are we? Well,
so don't worry about it.
I decided to like get around this so that I could feel slightly better about myself is wrecking the latest in a series, but the fix are reasonably, you know, once the individual installment is over, like you can feel pretty satisfied. And so I'm going to wreck the latest installment of X-Men First Class Charles Eric fic called All I Need to Know by Hockey/. And I think it's important that, you know, once a week at least, if at all possible, that, you know, if you can read something and make really undignified noises of glee, that's super important. And I don't know. I just, sometimes you want all the feelings, and I have to say that the daycare universe is really doing that for me. So I think that's what I'm going to go with.
Okay. That seems reasonable. I was a little worried there for a second that you were going to wreck one of the same stories as me, because I also have two wrecks this week. One of which is finished, and one of which is not. The unfinished one, speaking of Dresden Files, is Lucia Tanaka in Dresden Files fandom is writing an amazing contemporary AU that takes place in a bakery that Harry owns. And it's a really beautiful... It's so good. She's on part two of three or four. So part two came out this week. It's got jealousy, it's got baking, and, like, misunderstandings. It's basically everything that I could want in a single story.
Yeah, it's basically everything you love, like, hardcore in one place. I mean, there's no bad there.
Yeah.
And also, I feel, too, I mean, in case you are worried, dear listeners, she's very reliable. I feel certain she's going to finish this, so,
absolutely.
You know, carry on.
I'm pretty certain that that's going to end up in a good place. Yeah. The other story that I would recommend is called Caveat Questor in Suits fandom, which sounds kind of dumb, but is actually amazing, in which Harvey finds out that Mike has a tattoo, and he's desperate to see it, to know what it is. And he goes to ridiculous lengths to try and get to see it, including taking Mike on a business trip to Japan for almost no good reason.
But yeah, as someone who's actually read this, I can vouch for it as well. It's brilliant.
It's actually a really solid story. And again, we'll post links to all of these on the Twitter feed shortly after the episode is posted. So don't worry, you'll be able to read everything.
Excellent. Closing thoughts, guys?
Closing thoughts. I believe that the ongoing battle of whether or not Steve should hit it with Tony will continue... well after the Avengers movie.
I'm pretty sure that unless Tony Stark suddenly decides to... I actually don't know what Tony would have to do in order for me to believe that he was good enough for Steve.
Prue, if you come out of this movie like just a diehard shipper for them, I'm going to laugh so hard.
Oh, so will everyone. But you know what? Even if I have those yearnings, I won't give in because Steve is so pure. So pure.
Now who's the pervert?
Never said I wasn't one.
He's
like a 90-year-old virgin. He's like saved his V card for almost a century. Come on, like,
to be fair,
want Tony Stark to be the one to benefit from this? Shouldn't it be me?
It was either going to be Tony Stark or Tony Stark's dad. Those are your choices.
I vote Tony Stark's dad.
That would be really? Pretty hot.
Dude, yes. Now I'm thinking about it. It's good for me.
I bet it is.
Would have been a nice way to send him off to the heat of war.
It should happen right before the plane crash.
Right before?
Like, right before the plane crash.
Tony Stark's dad gets, like, Steve Rogers on the phone in his dying moments. He's like, hey, you want to have some radio sex?
Let's have some radio sex right now. In front of your almost a girlfriend.
And Howard Stark is like, don't worry, this totally doesn't count. You're, like, mostly a virgin still if we do this.
You're, like, 90% a virgin.
It's cool.
On that note, I'm gonna say we should sign off.
Indeed. All right, that was week two of Slash Report. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for coming on, Hoyden.
Oh, I'd say you're welcome, but I'm pretty sure this has been terrible for all of us.
It's true. We hate you. Never come back again.
We're totally going to have her back on again. Don't worry, guys.
And tune in next week for continuing terribleness, I guess.
Yeah. Good night.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Check 1, 2, 2, 'cause you can do whatever you put your mind to. It's like, yeah, might check 1, 2, 2, 'cause you can do